taking a look at this definition that they're saying their hope is going to be used for decision making when it comes to what policymakers will do with it, and of course, we drivers making sound decisions, and that's always going to be part of the mix. It'll be so important for each of us as decision makers to make the right decisions. Because you think about it, there are laws on the books already about driving under the influence, but people still decide, still make the decision to drive under the influence. People know that it's risky to drive after having snorted cocaine, but people still drive while high on cocaine. People know that it is risky to drive while after having taken certain medications. And very often, the labels will tell you, do not drive or operate any equipment after taking this medication. And people will still drive, operate equipment while on that medication after having taken it. Decisions. And so if the policymakers decide that they're going to seriously consider this definition that this expert panel has offered them, and they're going to move forward, possibly passing laws that address this matter, it is still going to be up to each one of us to make the kinds of decisions that will hopefully make the road safer, make people on the roads safer. And you think about it, there are a whole lot of people who would not drive under the influence because they don't even drink, who will drive while sleep deprived. So taking a look at this definition, it's the result of a systematic literature review by a panel of experts from sleep, transportation, and medicine, followed by consensus building and voting. The consensus statement has been endorsed by the AAA Foundation for Traffic Safety, the American College of Chest Physicians, the American College of Occupational and Environmental Medicine, and the Society for Research on Biological Rhythms. One of the statements made by Dr. Charles Zeisler, who's a PhD and MD and chair of this consensus panel, and also chief of the Division of Sleep and Circadian Disorders at Brigham and Women's Hospital, is that sleep-deprived drivers cause more than 6,400 deaths, and get this, 50,000 debilitating injuries on American roadways each year. Each and every year, 6,400 people die because of accidents caused by sleep-deprived driving. And can you imagine being involved in an accident that makes it impossible for you to walk again? How about the accident occurs and it does not make it impossible for you to walk again, but it does make it impossible for you to walk without a cane? Maybe it badly messes up your back and your back is messed up for several years, maybe the rest of your life. 50,000 debilitating injuries each year due to sleep-deprived driving. This study represents the first expert consensus determination available to guide anyone attempting to reduce the risk of these preventable tragedies through legislation and public policies. Now, there are quite a few reasons that we can be sleep-deprived. One reason, of course, is that, you know, we decide that we just want to have fun. And so even though we could be in bed, we stay up, whether it's because we're up on the phone talking with someone and this conversation is so much more important than our proper sleep, that we go ahead and miss that sleep and we stay on the phone. Maybe 2 or 3 hours past the time that we know we should have been in bed sleeping. Some people will be in bed talking, especially if they're single. Don't have to be concerned about waking up anyone next to them. In bed talking, in bed chatting over the internet. Sometimes it's because we're just having fun doing this. We're getting some kind of pleasure out of whatever we're doing. And we just decide, well, you know what? I'll sleep when I sleep. Sometimes it could be for any number of reasons. And we'll be covering this. I think that we're going to get to some of the other causes that may be affecting people in your age group throughout the conversation, the course of this conversation this week, today and Saturday. But just mentioning just some of the reasons. Sometimes it's because we get off late and not a whole lot we can do about that. If it's possible, if you can work this out, try to arrange to eat your dinner while you're at work. If you work late hours, you go in, let's just say 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning, thereabouts, and typically get off work around 6:30, 7:30 in the evening. If there's a way, see if you can arrange to take a break, a 20-minute break, a 30-minute break, because you work in those hours, you should be getting a lunch break. And so see if you can arrange to take your lunch break when you take your lunch break, but also maybe a 15-minute break later on where you can eat your dinner while you're still at work. 15, 20 minutes, whatever it is. Heat it up real quick, eat it. And I know it's not going to be ideal because you won't have, you know, 20 to 30 minutes to just take your time and eat. But if this will work, see if this will work for you. 15, 20 minute break and eating your dinner around 5 o'clock. I mean, if you're not getting out of there till about 7:30 anyway, 5 o'clock, 5:30, 15 to 20 minute break, eat your dinner. If you need to, have this conversation with your supervisor and let your supervisor know, hey, I'm working quite a few hours. Typically, I'm getting out of here around 7:30. I really don't want to continue to get home and eat dinner 8:30, 9 o'clock at night after leaving here 7:30, 8 o'clock. Would you allow me to start eating my dinners here around 5 or 5:30 so that I don't have to be eating at the time that, you know, at a time that my body's trying to wind down? Because remember what I've shared with you before. A lot of the experts have said that really by 7 o'clock at the latest, we need to be finished eating. Excuse me. So if we are eating our dinner at home, maybe we start around 6:30, not start cooking now, but start eating around 6:30 so that if we take our time, chew well, maybe chat a little bit with someone who's there with us at the home. Chew well. Take our time so that if it takes 20 to 30 minutes to eat that meal, by 7 o'clock, we're finished eating. So that we can then give our bodies some time to digest that food, because again, the experts recommend that we give our bodies an hour and a half to 2 hours minimum to digest the food that we've eaten in the evening before going to bed. Because again, around 7 o'clock, for most people, especially if their circadian rhythm is not thrown off, the body is trying to wind down around 7 o'clock. It starts really trying to wind down, slow everything down, including the digestive process. Our metabolism slowing down automatically. And so if we're eating these heavy meals late in the evening at the time that our bodies, including our metabolism, is slowing down, the food is not going to be digested as well. As a result, we can find ourselves really engaging in some unhealthy habits, maybe putting on more fat than we realize, having a greater body mass index than we realize, possibly producing more cholesterol, LDL, low density lipoprotein, LDL, the one that you don't want to have much of. As a result, of eating late at night. You may find that for some of you, not only do you, will you have those issues, but you may also find that you're putting on weight. And so you can actually see the consequences of eating those late meals. And you exercise, 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 and can't get rid of the excess weight, the excess fat, the excess mass, which isn't even a healthy mass. Eating late can cause that. But when we come back, listen to another video. Let's take a look at how we can set the stage for getting proper sleep beyond going to bed at the right time. That's important, but something else is important too. I'll share it with you when I come back.